Do you need logos or custom designs for your small business? Then contact Pete from Diamond Graphic Studios today at diamondgraphicstudios@gmail.com. That's Diamond spelt D-Y-M-O-N-D, graphicstudios@gmail.com for your free quote. Diamond Graphic Studios, a proud sponsor of the Brand Podcast and Magazine, available online at thebrandmedia.uk or your favourite podcast player. Hello and welcome back after a brief hiatus to the seventh episode of the Brand Podcast, the podcast by creative-minded people, made for and about creative-minded people. I'm still Pete Davis. And joining me today is a multi-talented creator who over multiple decades has created an ever-expanding universe that has been described as a multimedia project. He's a writer, producer, podcaster, a TV presenter, and an all-round nice guy. His Unseen Shadows universe is about to grow in the coming months. Here, from the Geek Syndicate podcast, to bring some sass to this podcast, is author Barry Nugent. How are you, Barry?
I'm doing good. No pressure. I was thinking after that intro, you were going to say a completely different name at the end. And here is Bob Saxby. Welcome. Yeah.
Who's on today? This sounds great.
Yeah. Looking forward to meeting that dude.
But things okay with you, mate, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't want to go into, you know, too much of the world ending, etc. And although it's all back to normal now, apparently, anyway, so it's all good. So after that intro, Barry's now curious as to who I'm going to be speaking to. I think I'm going to talk about your writing a little bit here, because most people, they're well aware that writing in particular, novels or prose, it can be quite solitary and quite a lonely place to be. You know, early mornings, late nights, sat alone with your own thoughts, etc. And it can be, as I say, quite a tough place to be in. And motivation and keeping your spirits up can be tough. So I read a few quotes from one of your blogs that I'd just like to read out here. Barry has an overactive imagination, which he needs to learn to control. Drawing comic characters is not what we do here, Mr. Nugent, so stop doing it. Here we do fine art. You'll never amount to anything in life, Nugent. And finally, self-publishing is for vanity writers and writers who just aren't good enough. So my first question, Barry, what motivates you as a writer?
What motivates me as a writer? I mean, that's like a greatest hits of like people like dumping on me, really. I should say, give a shout out. One of those was my English teacher. One of those was my computer studies teacher. One of those was a well-known and well-respected author who I shall not name here. He knows who he is. And yeah, boo sucks to all of you people because I'm still doing it. I now have a very lovely job in IT. Obviously, I still write. Drawing, not so much nowadays.
But still involved with comics in a sense.
Yeah, still involved in comics. My original plan was not to be a writer. My original plan was actually to be a comic artist. Although I just called it cartoonist back then. I think what keeps me going is like, this sounds a really silly thing to say, but like I've always had a desire to like save the world. I think it's just because like I grew up watching all of these sorts of larger than life sort of characters and films. And obviously I read comics like that and it's kind of sort of stuck with me. And you know I'm not about to develop superpowers any day or have some kind of world spanning adventure. So I think I get to kind of have that world with my writing. I get to sort of, you know, live vicariously through my characters, even though I kind of put them through the ringer.
Yeah.
But I've always been obsessed with the idea of heroism, you know, and in my life I've been lucky enough to know people who've inspired me in that way, not necessarily in doing grand things, but just that sort of day-to-day heroism that you see. Sometimes heroism is just getting up and going to work when you don't want to.
Yeah, just, you know, it can be a little thing, can't it, I suppose. It depends on what sort of place you are in life, I suppose, and if people, you know, like your ex-teachers are beating you down, you know, that, it can be heroic just to do those things.
Yeah.
Now, again, lots of people say, and that everyone has a book inside them. And from what I've read and heard, you certainly felt that way from quite a young age, where inspiration seems to have hit you from what I believe is probably your holy grail when it comes to franchises. Would that be right, Indiana Jones?
Yeah, nicely done. Nicely done. Yeah. Yes. No, spot on. Indiana Jones that's my jam. And yeah, it's just that, it's that weird feeling. I always sort of think, where would I be if I, would I still have ended up where I ended up had I not gone to see Raiders of the Lost Ark, or to put it better, had I not pestered my brother to take me to see Raiders of the Lost Ark? I think I was always circling the, I was going to say drain of creativity, but that sounds like a woman to put it. But I think, you know, I think I was always kind of circling some sort of creative outlet.
Yeah.
I was always doing weird things as a kid anyway, but nothing had kind of coalesced until I'd gone to see Raiders. And then I think everything kind of came together in that sort of bright, shining moment where I kind of knew there was just something going on that was kind of beyond me.
Yeah. Okay.
And again, you know, as I said to many people, it was my mum who kind of then sort of suggested to me to start writing. And I remember that I used to, this is going back to the 80s now, you used to call them rough books. I don't know if they still call them that, but at school you'd have a rough book. And that was what you'd sort of, what you were supposed to be using it for was writing down the notes in the lesson.
That's right. Yeah. And any working out on sums and stuff like that, that's where it went. Yeah. Not in the good stuff.
Yeah, and what I was doing was writing stories,
okay,
throughout my lessons, which is probably reflected in my my final grades at school, which weren't great.
To be fair, Barry, I think many of us were, you know, drawing on your bags, drawing on, you know, books and stuff like that. We were all doing it. But you mentioned there when you talked about your inspiration, it was something you said a little bit earlier on about saving the world. I know that in the first novel, The Unseen Shadows, first novel, Fallen Heroes, it's obviously dedicated to your mum, isn't it?
Yes.
And one of the quotes there, are you off to save the world again? So, I mean, it's obviously something that really has truly stuck with you. I mean, you said that if you hadn't have gone to see, or if your big brother hadn't have taken you to see Indiana Jones, would you have gone down the road of, you know, writing novels? But it does sound like your mum was somebody who perhaps would have pushed you that way anyway. You know, that creativity was clearly inside you. So, you know, it just, your mum, you know, sort of needed it out of you anyway, it sounds like.
Yeah, my mum and my dad, especially my mum, and probably after her, my sort of eldest brother, they kind of were my heroes, because they were out there doing things in a tough world. You know, it was a tough world, sort of growing up and stuff like that. And I think just watching them and seeing them do what they do was enough to kind of just keep me going, really.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's always a bit of a sad thing for me, and a great thing, because obviously it was great that I finished, even though I'd done sort of books before that, but it was great that I'd finished Fallen Heroes and I'd got it out there and I'd had some success with it and stuff. But it's always with that kind of sort of bittersweet, because mum never lived to see me finish it, and she certainly never lived to see what happened afterwards. And that was always something that was a bit of a shame. But I think she was one of those people, she always used to say to me, because, you know, I always talk about the fact that in my family, yes, you know, as brothers do, and I was the youngest, I got ribbed and all that sort of stuff. But they were all very sporty and I wasn't. I think that the sport gene sort of skipped me. And there were times I did feel a little bit left out and stuff. And I always remember my mum saying to me once, she said this to me once and then kept saying it to me even when I was an adult. And she always said to me, like, don't worry, you know, you're going to do something with your life. You're going to do something special. I'm still kind of waiting for the special thing to kick in. But I think, you know, having someone like me who's kind of brought up in that kind of, that diet of destiny and constantly seeing characters who have these special destiny, and having your mum sort of say that to you was enough to kind of, you talk about sort of inspiration and sort of keeping you going. I think certainly for me, when I was working on Fallen Heroes, I think it was hearing her voice kind of saying that, you know, always kept me going. But also as well is the fact that I love writing, even though there are times with I'm sure most writers will say that, where you're kind of in the depths of like procrastination or writer's block or why am I doing this or imposter syndrome. If you get right down to the core of it, people write because they love to write.
That's very true, I suppose. Yeah. And you mentioned their writer's block and you mentioned the insecurities, etc. But those sorts of thoughts and feelings can really drag you down. And I guess when you've got somebody positive, you know, like your mother obviously was, it's a great driving factor in life, not just not just in creativity. And to be honest with you, the industry that you've kind of gone into, well, any industry, to be fair, to actually succeed, it takes a lot of hard work, a lot of sacrifice. And I guess as a writer, it isn't something that you can kind of just do first time. There's draft after draft after draft, long hours. You know, there is a lot of sacrifice. And I mean, do you feel like you sacrificed a lot back then, or was it something, I guess, you did as a hobby and grew into, you know, that sacrifice? Because I know you're somebody who likes to get up early in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get up quite as early now. I mean, I sleep until 5 now.
Wow, well done.
But, you know, certainly when I was doing Fallen Heroes, like my writing day would start sort of 4 in the morning. I'd do a few hours in the morning and stuff, just because that's it was my best time to write.
Yeah. House is quiet.
Yeah. And also the world hasn't started yet. And all its sort of distractions haven't started. It's kind of just me. And in some ways, it's almost like the imposter syndrome side of me is asleep. It hasn't got up yet. So I'm able to sort of get to it. I've always found that for me, the imposter syndrome stuff comes much more when I'm doing things like this, or when I'm the kind of the marketing train, or, you know, if I'm trying to sort of get people to buy the book, or I'm trying to send it off to review, or I'm formatting and, you know, I'm formulating a newsletter or something like that. That's when the imposter syndrome really hits. Not so much when I'm actually sitting there and writing. I mean, I get that kind of fear of the blank page, you know, which is where procrastination comes in. But procrastination is very different to imposter syndrome, or at least it is for me.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of kind of answering the question, I think I've never really seen my writing as a sacrifice, because I think it's something I've always done. And even though there's times where it's much harder to write than others, it's just a part of me. I mean, I've been writing since I was 11. So to me, I don't feel like I'm giving anything, because to sacrifice, you're kind of giving something up, you know, whether it's time or whatever.
Yeah, maybe that sacrifice that people think about it like that is because generally it's after work that people do it. And, you know, so it's rather than going down the pub or going to see friends or going and doing a sport, I suppose. Maybe you're right. Maybe that's where it was, because you got up early in the morning. You didn't see it like that. So that makes sense. That makes an awful lot of sense.
You know, obviously I would write in the morning, but then I'm doing stuff in the evenings. I'm doing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and certainly when I was doing for it, I was writing over my lunch break. And to a certain extent, you're always on, you know, even when you're not physically writing, you're kind of writing in your head.
You're thinking, yeah, yeah. Coming up with new ideas and things like that, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, it comes very, very difficult to say to somebody, you know, you're with, to say, yeah, when they say, well, you're just sat there, you're not doing anything. No, I am. I'm working.
Yeah.
I'm thinking. And of course, they don't believe that. So, yeah, that's true. So, during the early years that you're writing these novels, and obviously you're honing techniques, styles, things like that, and your influences, you know, you've mentioned Indiana Jones, but I'm guessing sort of your influences must have come from an array of different mediums. Would I be correct in assuming that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of my go-to genres is kind of pulp adventure, of which there isn't enough of. But I kind of exposed myself to, if that sounds dodgy. But I mean, you know, you name it, I was, you know, whether it was sci-fi, thrillers, you know, action adventures, whether it was audio dramas, you know, books, comics. I think when I was growing up, I was quite a voracious reader. Weirdly, I'm less so now. Some of that is a time thing.
Time, yeah.
To be honest. And some of it is because there's actually so much of it. And there's so many... There's so many things competing to distract you or to suck up your time. Whereas I think when I was a kid, just because I was a kid in the 80s and a teenager in the 80s, there was less stuff available. You know, we didn't have iPads. Netflix didn't exist. The internet didn't exist. So for me, it was kind of going to the library on a Saturday, getting out a load of books, normally a load of Tintins or whatever books I could get, and then coming home and then just sort of crashing out in front of the gas fire in mum's bedroom and sort of reading for the rest of the day or rest of the weekend.
Yeah. Well, I think I've heard you mention before, you know, exactly what you've just said there, that, you know, way back in the 80s and perhaps even the early 90s, if you wanted to watch something, you had to be in on a Saturday night or a Thursday evening, whenever it was, you had to be in. There were no DVRs, you know, Christ, not even everybody had a VCR at the time. So if you missed it, that could be it. You may be lucky. Whereas now, like you say, there are probably right now on TV, there are probably 20 programs I would probably happily watch right now, compete for my time. And I've also got a DVR full of stuff. There's Netflix, there's Amazon Prime, there's, you know, all sorts of things. I think myself, they're exactly the same way. I'd get back from, say, the comic shop with 20, 30, 40 comics, and I would devour half of them that evening. And then the rest probably within a week or two. Whereas now I've probably got books from back in 2016 I still haven't read.
Yeah. And also as well is the fact that even with the comics, I mean, I was getting hand-me-down comics from my brothers, Marvel. Yeah. That's where I got my Marvel comics. I never read DC really that much as a kid. I got the occasional one.
Yeah.
My own comic that I was getting was, I used to read Eagle, and I used to read 2000 AD. But that was it, because there was no comic shop to go to near me. I know I lived in London, but if all the comic shops were sort of down, as we would say, down west, which was an adventure in itself. I think the first time I went to West End, I was probably 17, 18.
All right, okay.
London's one of those places, and certainly it was when I was growing up, where you kind of stayed in your area.
I get what you're saying.
I grew up in Tottenham, so I kind of stayed in Tottenham, North London, that sort of area, you know?
Hmm.
Whereas now, I've got comics on tap. I've got hundreds of comics on tap.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And it's almost that kind of decision overload where you kind of go, I sort of sit there and go, right, what should I watch now? What should I read now? And then I found that all of a sudden 3 hours have gone because I've sunk it into YouTube because I couldn't decide what to read or what.
Yeah. Huge problem. Yeah. Now, going back to your writing, your first novel, which is out of print and of your own admission needs a bit of editing, I believe you said, but it's something called Paladin, which,
yes,
again, I've scoured looking for a copy. I can't. I don't particularly like reading stuff digitally, so that's a bit of a pain, but I'm going to keep looking. But with it being your first published novel, forget about, you know, when you look back now, how proud were you, I should say, just to have finished and published that novel?
I mean, as proud as you could be. I mean, I love Paladin. You know, as much as I sort of say, you know, my style and work has got better since then. Yeah, it has. But I still love it.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, I'm biased. It's a cracking it's a cracking story. And, you know, and I kind of loved the idea of it. It was, and in some ways I've kind of gone full circle, but we'll come on to that later. But in the idea of it was a whole kind of sort of Romance in the Stone type vibe, where you had an author and he gets kind of embroiled in this sort of adventure. But the whole concept was, it was an author who writes these larger than life characters, and the person he gets involved with is like a princess who is pretty much like a kind of Lara Croft type character who reads his books and basically assumes that he's like his characters, and he's so far removed from his characters. And it's kind of what they, you know, and it's like the shenanigans they get up to. And then as they go on, it's kind of like you discover that he is a bit more closer to his characters than he thinks he is.
Oh, okay.
So, and it was a kind of just a straight up sort of modern day sort of pulp adventure, really. And certainly nowhere near as dark as some of the darker places I went to.
Yeah, you've gone to, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was quite light-hearted, I think. And I really enjoyed that book.
Do you think then, you know, as you say, it might need some editing. Do you think you'd ever consider going back to that? Not just that novel, but maybe that world. Or do you think it's just best left in the past and I've moved on and, you know, found new avenues?
Well, who's to say the world of the Paladin isn't the world of Unseen Shadows? Because you've read Fallen Heroes.
I have read Fallen Heroes.
So I can say to you, you've met one of the characters from Paladin.
Okay, now you've got me stumped there. Okay.
He's a mind that there's a character in there called Buchanan who comes in right near the end. He flies a plane.
He does. His name's Sam Buchanan.
Yeah. He's one of the characters from Paladin.
Okay. Interesting.
I don't know how far you've gotten into Forgotten Warriors yet.
I haven't started it yet, no. The worrying thing was, full disclosure here, I bought Fallen Heroes 2019, I think. Started reading it, and it's one of them things, as we've just said, there's so much going on. You put it down and you pick it back up again. And in the end, I came around and thought to myself, I'm going to read it from start to finish.
Yeah.
Because if I keep reading bits here and there, you forget things.
Yeah.
So, I haven't got round to starting Forgotten Warriors just yet, but I will be in the next few weeks. And probably do a full read through too. So.
Yeah. But there is a mention of an author in there, and that author is the author from Paladin.
Okay, so you mentioned, I suppose tying it all together, lots of research there. I do quite a lot of research for these podcasts, and sometimes it can take me days, sometimes longer, planning the podcast and the magazine. But the planning that must go into making a novel, that must be pretty difficult. And then Unseen Shadows, forget as just one novel, but it's a whole universe now, and you've even just admitted there that your original novel, there's even bits in there. So what made you decide to take that difficulty level of planning and researching, etc., to a whole nother level?
I mean, for a start, like, the whole larger concept of Unseen Shadows was kind of by accident. You know, when you think of the comics and the comic side of it, I mean, the actual novels itself, I kind of always wanted to do a trilogy. I've already done a trilogy. I'd written a trilogy when I was a teenager.
Was the idea of a trilogy because, you've already mentioned Indiana Jones, which originally was a trilogy, and as we were growing up, you had Star Wars and all they were all trilogies, weren't they? So was that kind of where your inspiration came from?
Yeah, definitely. I think, if I had it over again, I might not have done a trilogy.
Okay.
What I discovered is trilogies are really hard. Trilogies are really, really hard. Solo books are great because you can kind of do, you start, middle, end, and you're out. Whereas a trilogy is really difficult, especially whereas I knew when I was doing Fallen Heroes, I kind of wanted it to be, I knew I was going to do a second novel and a third novel at some stage, but I kind of wanted it to be relatively self-contained, as in you could read it and go, I've had an adventure, not I've had half an adventure.
Yeah, I get that, yeah.
But at the same time, you know that there's more going on and there's another adventure to be had.
Right.
And I kind of felt like, yep, I've covered that. And then I remember when I sat down to try and plan out Forgotten Warriors, because even though I had broad strokes of what I wanted the trilogy to be, it was really broad strokes. And the only person who knew what the broad strokes were then was Dave, because I'd got an overview which I'd sent to Dave to read.
Okay.
For people who don't know, Dave is my best and oldest friend. I talked over some ideas with him, and then I sat down to see Forgotten Warriors, and I suddenly just panicked. I just thought, I don't know why in the hell did I decide to write a trilogy? I don't know what I'm doing. What am I going to do with these characters? Where am I going to take them now? How can I expand this story and this world? And I think in the end, because I wanted to try to do something a bit different to maybe even what I was going to do and sort of challenge myself. So in the end, which is what you'll see, I don't want to give away too much because obviously...
No, don't.
But, one of my ideas was to sort of turn the spotlight onto some people would argue it, but I would say the secondary characters.
Yeah.
And the idea was to take the secondary characters, and by the time we got to the end of Forgotten Warriors, there would be heroes in their own right. There would be main characters in their own right.
Well, we have had a mini discussion about this, that when you talk about the fringe characters, the sidekicks, etc., in the second one, you did something, and I won't spoil it. I know it's 13, 14 years old now, the first novel, but I won't spoil the ending. But you did something that part of me still hasn't forgiven you for at the end of the that first novel, to be perfectly honest with you. So you had to kind of bring some of those characters to the forefront as well, didn't you? So was that to challenge yourself a bit more, or, you know, are you a sadist or?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, I am a sadist, and I did want to challenge. I did want to challenge myself, and I thought that I'd, you know, it's sometimes it's a test of how well you've created your own characters, I guess. And I've always had this thing of not just having secondary characters just for the sake of it, just to sort of deliver lines that didn't get out. I've always, every character that I kind of bring in my head, they've got a whole, they could run off and do, I could do a story on them. So, for example, like in the first book, there's a whole sequence set around the reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I could have taken him and written a load of books about him, you know, investigating the occult and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then obviously the weird thing is I had never imagined that I would then actually see that happening, because we then had a comic on that character. And then we had a little run of web comics. I think we did 3 Bob Kelsey web comics all centered around him. So it's been really weird, the whole Unseen Shadows universe, and the fact that it came about just really briefly, where I'd been approached by a company who wanted to adapt Fallen Heroes as a graphic novel. And we did the first issue. And then the company, well, we were midway through the first issue, sorry. We were still through, like, we'd done some sketches and stuff, and then the company went bust.
And this was, early 2010, something like that, was that? Yeah.
Yeah. And the creative team at the time, who were just fabulous, kind of wanted to keep going. And obviously back then, we didn't have Kickstarters and the like, so I kind of sold some ad space, and I was lucky enough at the time I was doing a podcast then, and we had some success with the podcast, so I knew a few people and stuff, so people were great. They kind of rallied around to sort of chip in, as it were, and we were able to sort of release the first issue, and we did the first 2 issues, and then sadly we it kind of didn't happen. Because it would have been a mammoth task, I think. If you read the 2 issues and know Fallen Heroes, you kind of know that we've only just skimmed the surface of the book. But then the weird thing that was happening behind the scenes was one of the people in one of the creative team had suggested to one of the writers who actually he wasn't working on the comic. He was just a fan. He'd read the books and stuff. He'd read the book. Okay. And I was a fan of his work. This is Cy Dutton. I was a fan of his work. And Nick, who was involved, basically said, "Why don't you two sit down and then talk about it?" You know, if it wasn't for Nick Wilkerson, if she's listening, I hope she is.
And she's the letterer of the book, isn't she?
Yes. Yeah. On some of the comics, anyway. Yeah.
Some of the comics.
She. If it wasn't for her, there would be no Unseen Shadows universe. That's just an absolute fact.
Right.
So Cy kind of approached me. We sat, we talked. And I remember what I said to Cy was, you know, you pick a character, you know, and he picked Reverend. He just said, I absolutely love this character. I want to do something with him. And originally, and the Reverend is this kind of vigilante Punisher type character who is actually was a Reverend.
And may or may not be dead, seemingly. Seemed to be quite supernatural himself, didn't he?
Yes and no. Well, the concept behind the Reverend was he's if you thought he was supernatural, he just had a supernatural drive.
Right. Okay. Because
rather than actually being supernatural, he just had a drive to thirst for vengeance, I guess, and doing what he believed was right, regardless of the consequence. And it was just something about that Cy liked, and he wanted to delve into his origins. Now, I was originally a little bit not sure about, because I quite liked the idea that he was quite a mysterious character, even though there was some origin stuff. However, I'd written something in the book, which I later cut out of the book. So this wouldn't have been in the version that you read.
No.
And there is a kind of a part where he is, he's kind of in hospital and he's been bandaged up and stuff. And after what's happened to him, again, I don't want to spoil it. And this is where he then gets recruited by an agency who kind of train him. Now, all of this isn't in the book.
No.
But I'd had these opening scenes and then cut them because I wanted to, you know, keep the mystery of the character. So I sent that to Cy. Cy really liked it. And then he worked on the script, came back to me, and there was a lot back and forth. And obviously, we then got Wrath of God, which was an absolutely amazing comic that he did. But what happened was, it was because other people saw Cy working with me, and the artist and Nick and everyone, and they knew them and respected them, that other people started to approach me. So I'd love to say it was this big grand thing of me going out and gathering people up, but it was kind of people would come into me saying, could we get involved?
But I mean, that you say that, but the truth is the podcast in some respect, obviously the networking that you did through the podcast at that point must have helped you in some terms, you know, bringing in these creators. It could have just been Cy and Nick.
Yes, yeah.
And obviously the material as well. You know, I think I read somewhere that you said that you wanted, you know, if somebody wanted to work on any of these books, they had to have read the material. They had to, you know, be sure that they wanted to write. It wasn't just a job for them, that they wanted to write or draw these characters.
Yeah.
So the material definitely drew people in as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big ask, you know. I mean, I had, certainly when we did the first sort of anthology, Tales of the Fallen, now I was getting approached by writers wanting to get involved. And I was turning around and sort of saying, my whole pitch was, right, go away and read the book.
Mm-hmm.
One, if you like the book, then okay. And two, pick a character.
Yeah.
Pitch me a story about that character. And, you know, and touch wood, no one read the book and then said, nah, you're all right, mate.
Good. That really would have been a kick in the shins.
It would have been a kick in the shins, you know. But what I think, looking at, because I did a thing on the website where I kind of asked a question, why did you get involved with sort of Unseen Shadows? And what I liked about the responses were, certainly from the writers, it was the fact that I said to them, pick a character. I didn't say to them, you can come on board, but I want you to do this story and I want you to do it this way.
Mm.
They kind of had creative freedom in terms of, one, picking the character, and then two, pitching me the story. Now, once obviously things were going and they would turn in the script, then there'd be some back and forth if things weren't quite the way, you know, if I didn't think they quite got the sound of the character or certain things that, you know, the sort of nitty gritty of it.
Yeah, they had, if they hadn't found the voice of the character, it's yeah, that makes sense.
And I think if you talk to any of the writers, I don't think they would turn around and go, there were huge swathes of dialogue or scenes that I just cut. Yeah. You know, that didn't really happen. And I think the second thing was that, certainly for me, the really interesting thing was, a lot of this work was done while either before I started Forgotten Warriors or during Forgotten Warriors. So what that meant was, a lot of what they were doing influenced what I was writing. And it's one of the things why I always say on the website and stuff, that all of the stories, all of the comics and stuff, are all 100% canon.
Yeah.
You know, there is no, you know, this isn't a what if, this isn't a kind of nice little whatever. And some of those stories directly feed into the second book. And some of those stories influenced the way I went with certain things whilst I was doing Forgotten Warriors, you know. And there's so many, if you've read the comics, there's just so many Easter eggs in that second book because of that.
Oh, okay. So I suppose from their point of view as well, as you just said, anything they write becomes canon. You kind of feel more involved in the world as well. So you've just mentioned there that Fallen Heroes was creating a bit of a buzz around the comic community, people get involved. Now, you've been a big part of that community for about a decade now, I guess. And during that time, the world of Unseen Shadows has gone into an audio drama and almost a film as well. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that? I know that you're a bit disappointed about the film, aren't you?
Well, I mean,
But proud.
I'm proud. It would have been, it was a TV show they were going for.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Six episodes, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah. It's funny because I think, you know, hindsight is a beautiful thing. And I think a lot of my attitudes towards all of that have changed. You know, I think now I'm less upset about it.
Bitter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something I was thinking as, you know, the fact that, you know, there's, as I mentioned earlier, Netflix, Amazon, and all these different, you know, streaming services. Right now, you know, it probably would be optioned and called Sci-Fi Channel or somewhere would have had it.
Yeah, I mean, it's I won't lie, you know, there isn't a day go past where a new sort of genre show comes on Netflix that I don't have that little...
yeah, tinge of regret, yeah.
Yeah, a little tinge.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I said, I think someone said this to me once when I was on a real, you know, downer with everything, and they sort of said, you know, that I spend all my time sort of looking up and not enough time sort of looking ahead or not even looking behind, you know, because if you looked behind, you'd see a whole host of people that are clamoring to get to where you've been, where you've already been, you know. And I think for me, if someone had said to me, because Fallen Heroes, you know, it's self-published, and it was self-published at a time where self-publishing was a dirty word. I mean, it's, you know, it still has its sort of detractors now, but it's a completely different landscape. I mean, given the fact I'm about to self-publish another book, I've had to sort of re-educate myself on the whole self-publishing landscape, because it is vastly different to when I started.
And only a decade ago.
Yeah. I mean, even the term, I mean, you know, even now there's a lot of people, there's actually a difference now between self-publishing and what they call indie publishing now. So it's a completely different, I'd probably, looking at the classifications of it, I would be classed now as an indie author, an independent author, rather than a self-publisher. So I think I'm very proud, very, very, very proud of what I achieved with the film and stuff. And film, you got me doing it now with the TV show. And the fact, I mean, you know, I still remember the day of getting an email. I mean, you know, to be sent an email from the makers of Sharp TV series, which many people probably won't remember now, but it was a huge series back in the day with
Sean Bean. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, he's in everything. I mean, he dies very quickly, but he's in everything. Yes. So people should know who he is.
They probably would have cast him as the Reverend or something, just so they could have, you know, spoiler now. But you know, to get that email from them and me turning around and asking them if they're winding me up because they sent the email on April Fool's Day, which is
I can't believe
no word of a lie. It was April Fool's Day. And I generally thought it was a wind up. And it was only when they kind of spoke to them on the phone and they were like, no, we're not winding you up. Can you come down to London so we can talk about it? And the whole reason why, and again, it's that thing of, it's something my wife says, she said there's always an element of luck. She said it's, well, not so much luck, she said it's about
being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, it's about your book landing on the, I mean, it's the same thing she said, you know, it's about your book landing on the right desk at the right time. And what had happened was they were looking for properties to option, and they came across, but they were looking for graphic novels to option as films and TV shows. And they saw the cover of Fallen Heroes and they thought it was a graphic novel.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a certain amount of graphic novel or comic look about it, isn't there?
Yeah, so they bought a lot of copies for the office, and it turned up and they were books. I'm like, oh, it's what we were expecting. And then they read the books, obviously they loved it, and then got in contact with me. And it was a really exciting time, you know, because I had an agent at the time and I was able to sell the rights, which was something that I wouldn't have done had I not have had an agent involved, because one of the things that he'd said to me was, like, most of these companies, what they do is they just go in and sweep up options. Yeah. And a lot of authors are just so excited because they think, right, I'm going to be the next sort of, you know, my book's going to be the next sort of Lord of the Rings on the screen or whatever, you know, let's Game of Thrones, that they give away the options. They don't, you know, ask for money and stuff.
Because you imagine that you're going to get masses of money at the back end.
Exactly. Yeah. You see it as a, you know, you kind of see it as a done deal, and it's quite difficult to not get swept up in that. And at the time, I had the agent I had, he was like, no, I'm going to go to them and I'm going to ask them for money. I'm going to make them pay for it. Because he said, even if they only pay a small amount, they're out of pocket, which means that's going to make them work harder for it. He said, and also I will make sure that it's a limited time. You know, they took the rights for 6 months.
Yeah.
So basically, they had 6 months in the, and then the rights revert back to me. There was no, they don't own the rights anymore. Everything's with me now.
You hear stories about creators who sign the rights away for years at a time and nothing gets done with it. They're just optioned. They get paid a few thousand pounds for 2 years and they just sit there and wait for those 2 years to be up because they know that nothing's being done. So, yeah, it makes sense that it, I suppose, like you say, at least you had an agent with their head on their shoulders.
Yeah, and it was exciting because, you know, they went to town, you know, they did a proper serious treatment and pitching and whatever. And they you know, they went to BBC, nearly took it. Sci-Fi Channel nearly took it. Fox nearly took it. And one of the main reasons why it didn't was because back then you didn't really get a lot of US, UK co-productions.
And it would have needed to have been a US, UK production, would it have? Okay.
Mainly for the budget they would have needed, I think.
Okay.
Part of what it was saying. Because obviously, you know, you're writing urban fantasy, you're writing, you've got no budget.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
It's like, yeah, magic, yeah, not a problem.
Look what I did. I wrote it down on a page and it's there. What are you going on about?
Yeah. Dragons plus the fact that mine was like a massive mismatch of different genres as well. So it wasn't just that straight.
Yeah,
fantasy. I mean, now, I mean, there's a lot more urban. I mean, again, when I brought out Fallen Heroes, kind of going back when I was trying to approach traditional publishers, some of the ones that did reply, one of the reasons that they didn't take it was because they said there was nowhere to market. There wasn't a shelf they could put it on, and part of that was because, you know, like a term like urban fantasy and stuff like that didn't exist when.
And again, it's so strange to think that. In the space of 10 to 15 years, how much has changed?
Oh, it's dramatic.
You know, but it's, you know, like you said, there's so much out there now.
Yeah.
So do you think that there's a chance that maybe, especially with, you know, your book two's out and you're currently writing book three, do you think that there ever could be a chance that Unseen Shadows could find its, you know, place on the BBC or on a streaming network?
I mean...
Or do you think that, you know, that's a lot of work to push it now, I suppose?
I mean, you know, never say never. I mean, I think that part of the reason why, I suppose, in some ways I haven't pushed it as much in terms of that direction. I mean, I don't have an agent anymore, so I need to have a production company and things like that. But part of it is because I want to finish the trilogy.
Right, okay, yeah. So, yeah, get that out there, get that finished, and then at least you've got a property to pitch then, I suppose, as opposed to two-thirds of a property.
And I think that's why I often list the stats of Unseen Shadows. So when I sort of say, you know, that there's two novels, audio drama, choose your own adventure, 20 comics, of which two of those are, three of those are graphic novels. There isn't many, you know, projects like that, I don't think, certainly a self-publishing point of view. So I think for me, certainly my goal is to finish the trilogy, and I often thought, what would I do afterwards? You know, would I then go off and, because you see authors will do a series and then they'll go off and do a series and come up with a completely different world and stuff. But actually, my latest novel's kind of decided that for me.
Yeah.
So I'll be staying where I am and just continuing to write, because it's a great, I love the world, I love the characters. So in some ways, why would I go off somewhere else? And in many ways, I've done all the world building. I mean, I can kind of keep stretching it a little bit, but I kind of know what I'm working with.
And I think as long as you're still enjoying it and, you know, you still get that love and excitement out of writing these characters, then like you say, why go off and do something else when you can just keep building on something? So, as you say, you know, a character in the first novel or the second novel who you love, who you then decide to kill off because you're that kind of sadistic person. Well, hopefully there'll be another character who comes along, you really enjoy writing them, and you decide to, you know, take them on a journey until you decide to, you know, dismiss them just as easily.
can I respond in kind?
Yeah, go for it.
That some of the more dramatic choices that I made, as far as the best way to put it, with Fallen Heroes, like some of them still haunt me to this day because some of them are kind of untakebackable. I mean, that's not a word, and I'm proving myself to be an awful wordsmith. But I kind of went so back and forth with them, you know, and certainly one of the characters, because obviously one of the characters dies. I don't say in who, so that's not a spoiler. Well, to be fair, it's like several of the characters die. But yeah. One of them dies in a way which that could be classed as quite senseless.
Okay.
Because it's not, I was reading this thing about doing, you know, killing off characters and how it should be. One, they should go in a kind of heroic fashion, you know, a sacrificial death type thing. And yeah. Two, it's more about how other people react to their death rather than the actual death of the character. It's how other people react to it that gives it more emotional weight. And in some ways, I think you don't really see, it sounds like I'm dissing my own book now. In some ways, you don't get the emotional weight of some of those things that happened, some of those deaths, until you get to Forgotten Warriors. In fact, I would say almost certainly for some of the characters, their whole journey is dealing with the emotional weight and baggage of the deaths in the first novel. It kind of fuels their arc in the story.
Okay.
I mean, you're still not going to forgive me. Yeah?
No, I'm not. It's
it's a sign of a great.
It is. Yeah, I agree. You know, when you get any sort of feeling towards any sort of characters, you know, and you feel disappointed when something happens to them, whether it be, you know, that death or anything happening to them.
I had certain people who I won't name in this podcast threaten me with actual violence whilst they were reading Forgotten Warriors if a certain character, because they could see certain things coming, they were like, if that character, I will either punch you in your face or I will just never talk to you again.
And these are your friends?
These are friends, yeah.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Well, we talk about characters then. I know that some of them are loosely based on friends and you've got friends who helped with their input, but obviously it was your job to pull them all together. And there's a certain element in the first novel, at the very least, of sort of broken family running through them between two of the characters. Again, I'm not going to name them because it would be a slight spoiler, I guess, right now for anybody who hasn't read that first novel. But I know it's already been mentioned. You've already mentioned your family, and they were a big part of your life. They were, you know, very dear to you. So I mean, my question is, when you're writing these characters, especially something that perhaps you haven't gone through, you know, where do you draw that from? You know, is it friends? Is it friends and family? Is it something you draw from TV shows or is it just stuff you just kind of make up and think, well, I guess it'd be like that?
Yeah, I think it's elements of all of those things. You know, I think it's drawn from stuff I've read, stuff that I've watched, my own life experiences.
I mean, the whole brotherly thing, you mentioned, you know, you and your brothers, you were tight, but you were picked on a little bit because you were the younger. Was it just a case of, right, I'll take that sort of, those joking moments and the digs I was given, etc., and I'll turn it into something 10 times worse, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Working through my own issues. I think a lot of that stuff kind of came less out of my own relationship with my brothers and more out of the relationships between those two characters in the story. They kind of, when I was developing them, originally, it's not a spoiler because you don't know who they are, so originally they weren't going to be brothers.
Right.
But the more I kind of worked on them, the more I sort of thought, actually, they would work as brothers.
Yeah.
But if I was going to do them as brothers, they couldn't get on to begin with.
No.
You know, and then it was about trying to find what would be a big enough reason that they would, well, certainly there'd be some hatred on one side and regret on the other side. And then trying to find a way to sort of certainly bring them closer together. I wouldn't necessarily say completely heal the rift, which is really important to me, which is why when you get to some of the stuff at the end or whatever, that it wasn't going to be one of these kumbaya where they would suddenly hug and then that would be it.
Yeah. I have to admit, I did wonder whether that was about to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It needed to be something that was a kind of hard fought sort of relationship. But the closer they came together and the moments of closeness that you find, you read between them, that stuff was pulled straight from my relationship with my brothers.
Okay.
It's a really weird story, but so my brothers never read any of my stuff, sort of growing up or anything like that. And my brother Danny read Fallen Heroes. He is the least reader in our house by far. If he's listening to this, he would agree. And it was his mates telling me, like, they'd gone away and it was a big family holiday and Danny was always up in his room because he was reading the book. And we're talking, like, I don't know, sort of eight, nine years ago, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
I remember, and then my brother read it, and it was weird because they were sending me, like, WhatsApp messages where there's a sequence in the book where the two brothers are in a tent in the middle of a snowy wasteland, and they're having a conversation, and it comes around to a conversation about their mum and stuff like that. And there's this whole thing about one of them saying about to the other one, like, I remember you never liked baked beans, and he was like, oh yeah, remember that time? That is literally like
something you pulled from your history.
Something I pulled from my history as a kid or whatever. Obviously, I'm telling you now, so you know, but no one else would have got, like, no one else would have got, they wouldn't have got that.
No.
My brothers read it and went straight away. They were like, I remember that. That was you, wasn't it? You know? So I think a lot of it is drawn from my own experiences, but a lot of it is just drawn from just watching the world around you and seeing other people's relationships and stuff, you know?
Okay. Well, okay. So I'm going to move forward now from the early novels and specifically, the Fallen Heroes. Moving forward to sort of 2018, 2019, you know, we've just been talking about characters and stuff like that. And obviously we mentioned research. And so you're researching these characters that, or building these characters that your friends have kind of, you know, helped you with. And then you're researching places, you know, in Japan and France, New York, you're researching cults and facilities, UN facilities and ancient castles. I mean, that's one thing. But what you've decided to do around 2018, 2019 is now try and tap into the mind of a child with your upcoming novel, Trail of the Cursed Cobras, or Cursed Cobras. Now, you've taken it back in time to the sort of 80s, haven't you, with these kids. Did you ever think about tapping into today's youth and trying to find their voice, or was it always going to be, you know, a throwback to a time that, I guess, you know, you knew a bit better as a child?
I think originally, when I was first asked to do this, because originally I was asked to do it, and then it's kind of become my own sort of thing. I was asked by an agent at the time who was interested in signing me up, and it didn't work out. And she was primarily trying to get me involved to write middle grade fiction. And my first reply when she said that to me was, have you actually read my...
I am curious about that, because I've heard that sort of story. And, you know, what made her decide, well, this guy would write, you know, this middle grade fiction well, when... As you say yourself, the novels and the comic books are about death and adventure fantasy.
I think what she wanted me to bring to the table was the adventure fantasy stuff without the extreme violence and bleakness, you know, or certainly try to sort of scale it back. And I remember I'd had a meeting with her, and I'd come home and I was talking to my wife, aka the founder of all knowledge and wisdom, that I can't do it. And it's normally my default position for a lot of things where I just go, I can't do it.
Right.
And I kind of have to get over myself. But I came home and I was like, I can't do it. And she was like, well, writing middle grade fiction, I can't do it, you know. And a big part of that was like me saying, I don't know how kids think today. Well, I didn't use the term today. I just said, I can't write for kids. I don't know how kids, even though I read a lot of middle grade fiction. I love middle grade fiction. I'm a massive Artemis Fowl fan. That's one of my favorite sort of books. And I very much don't really think of middle grade fiction, adult fiction. I just kind of think of fiction.
Yeah, okay.
And it was Sue who sort of said to me, like, well, you know, write what you know then. So just write what you know, you know. You got up to some stuff when you were a kid. What about, you know, think about that. It always seems to be the women in my life that have far more sense than I do.
You mentioned it earlier on. I mean, it does seem to be that that inner critic of yours is telling you you're not good enough constantly. And it's going to take somebody else to tell you you are and to give it a go.
Yeah. And I think when she did that kind of write what you know thing, and combined with the getting up to stupid things as a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone gets up to stupid things as a kid, but I definitely got into like what you could be classed as supernatural shenanigans as a kid. There's not many kids that go like hunting Celtic head cults with their best mate, you know, or werewolves or
just a normal Saturday.
Yeah, on a Saturday. Probably the ghost thing everyone's kind of done. We literally went werewolf hunting and saw what could be classed as a werewolf. It's a story I tell all the time. I think once I got that idea in my head of going back in time, sitting in the 80s, not because of Stranger Things, but because I knew what it was like growing up in the 80s. I knew what it was like to be a kid in the 80s, yeah. How kids like that talked, what school was like, what the teachers were like. It then started to come together. And I knew I wanted it to be a full-on sort of pulp adventure with kids in a North London comprehensive school. And after that, it kind of, not to say wrote itself, it's not, but it came together probably the fastest out of any of the stories I've ever worked on.
Really?
Yeah. And I think some of that is because I was able to draw much more so on my own experiences as a kid.
Right, okay.
You know, being in school in a way that I didn't do with my other books, because a lot of that is me having to sort of use my imagination. Was I think this one, I'd go, oh, okay, I remember what it was like being in the maths class and some of the teachers that didn't like me. And
so you're saying that you've never actually been a member of a cult and, you don't go around shooting people?
Not that I'm going to admit.
Not recently. Okay, fair enough. You say there that this new book, it came together a lot quicker than the previous book. I know the first one, you know, took a number of years, and the second one took close to a decade, I believe.
Yeah.
This third one seems to be coming together a lot quicker. The Silent Immortals, the third part of the Unseen Shadows trilogy. Mm-hmm. But writing the two different books there, and you're currently, I believe, writing them side by side, kind of, or in a sense.
Yeah, at the moment I'm on not a hiatus, the wrong way to put it, but obviously, so Cursed Cobra was with an editor at the moment, so he's doing some work on it and it's going to come back to me. And I'm desperately trying to get finish my very first author website, which I've never had one before, which is the pinnacle of imposter syndrome, is that I didn't feel that I was worthy of having a website called BarryNugent.com.
No.
So I've always flirted all these different other websites, and I suddenly put my foot down and said, actually, I want to say this is who I am, and I must lay out my storefront, lay out my tables, and this is who I am, this is what I do, this is what I think I'm good at doing, you know, come along on the journey, as it were.
And it means you can put everything under one roof there, rather than having an Unseen Shadows website, and then obviously you'd need another website for anything else you've done, and you know, and another website obviously which recently shut down, the Geek Syndicate one. So like you say, it brings it all together and you can put it all under one roof, and I guess it makes it easier to run. But my question there about the books though was there a different element of fun writing the sort of supernatural Unseen Shadows as opposed to writing this new I keep going to call it young adult. I don't know whether that's something completely different than middle grade fiction.
It is. I mean, young adult is slightly older.
Slightly older, okay.
Middle grade is, if you think young adult is like the Hunger Games books.
Okay, okay.
And you think middle grade fiction is like...
slightly younger.
Harry Potter.
Okay.
First sort of three, four Harry Potters, because obviously they grow.
They get a bit, they get a bit darker, don't they, I guess. But I guess writing those books... you know, alongside each other, it must be nice to be able to come out of one world, a slightly darker world, and go and write something a little bit more fun. But then you go back into that darker element, and it's a different kind of fun, I guess, as a writer.
Yeah, it's something Sue said to me when I wrote the first draft of Treader Cascobas in a month, which I've never done. Well, was it a month? Maybe two, I don't know. But certainly it's the fastest I've ever written a story, a first draft anyway. Now, granted, it's obviously a lot shorter, but still. And she said, you know, it's the most fun I've ever seen you writing.
Really?
And she's been there since, you know.
Yes.
Since from here. Yeah. So that sort of says a lot to me. I think you're right. It's different types of fun, you know. And certainly for me, Forgotten Warriors was a far darker book than I'd intended it to be. And I think part of that was because, you know, my oldest brother died and my dad died sort of whilst I was writing the book. And, you know, and I think, and whilst I was writing, obviously, Fallen Heroes, mum passed away. So yeah. I then got into this head like that, you know, my books were cursed, you know. And
right.
And but also, you know, with loss, you know, you kind of knocks you for six. And
yeah, of course.
And I'd lost sort of my two biggest kind of influences and cheerleaders and stuff, you know. I think it's Neil Gaiman who says something like, you know, whenever you're, even when you're struggling, you should, you know, make good art. If you're ill, you should make good art. If you're suffering from depression, you should make good art. You should just make art, I think is what he meant. And, you know, after a long time, I think that's what I started to do. And that came out into the second book. And certainly for me, there's whole sections I reread and I'm like, I don't know how I wrote that, because it feels like a different person has written it.
Because of the place you were in your life at the time, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, definitely, you know. And it is really interesting talking to people who have read Fallen Heroes who didn't read Forgotten Warriors, because they who know me, because they can see it. I think that's the thing, you know, they can see it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned earlier on that it is a darker book, the second one, isn't it? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I think they've called it The Empire Strikes Back or
The Unleashed Shadows.
Which, to be fair, part of that was what I was going for.
Yeah. It was intentional.
Yeah, it was always going to be darker, but I just didn't expect it to be quite where it went. Mm. So for me, coming off that and then working on something which is so light and fun, yes, there are some sort of, you know, slightly darker elements with Tread of the Cursed Cobras, but I mean, it's not in the same hemisphere.
No, and as you say, you've got to dial it back because of the age range and the audience that you're actually focusing on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, with that in mind, are you looking at potentially, you know, looking at getting this book, you know, maybe even into schools?
I mean, honestly, I haven't even thought that far ahead. I mean, I want to get it out. It's really important. This book is really important to me in many different ways, some of which I probably won't sort of go into because I don't be about that. I think people who know me will know my reasonings for doing certain things with it, you know.
Yeah.
And I think for that reason I would like to see it in schools and libraries and stuff. I think one of the things Dion, who's made it, said is sort of reading it is what's quite nice is that because it is self-published, you know, he says I've kind of pushed the boundaries a little bit of what you would maybe do with something aimed at 9 to 12 year olds.
Right.
But from my perspective, that's what my life was like when I was 12. Obviously not the whole supernatural saving world.
But like you say, the adventure in the you know, the, yeah.
The adventure in the how you talk to your mates, you know, how you deal with your family and that sort of stuff, you know. And that, even though you sort of say, you know, you've got to sort of scale back some of the darkness, I mean, this is a story where, like, one of the main characters, out of five kids, you know, one of the kids has lost his mum, but still talks to his mum. He can hear his mum, but we don't know if he's hearing his, you know, whether or not this kid is going through trauma and it's just like he's hearing his mum, he's imagining his mum's voice.
Right.
Or whether or not with the supernatural element, it actually is his mum.
Okay.
So you kind of got that going on as well as everything else. And that's not actually the main story beat. That's just a part of it. But I think what I love about this book, I think summed up by, I'm going to try and see if I can remember the tagline that I came up with, which was, I think it was No Powers, No Destiny, Just Courage. And
that sounds that sounds about something I've read earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was because, like I said before, I'd read a fair bit of middle grade sort of fiction and young adult stuff and just normal stuff, you know. And you know, it was this. I started to get fed up. Sorry to put it, but it's just the idea that you had to be special.
Okay.
You know, and it was even if you started off in a, it doesn't matter that you started off in, someone else could write this book and it would be a set of North London school kids, but actually they were destined to be Knights of Camelot, you know, or they were destined to go to this special school to learn special powers and have special abilities and stuff. So it was always the place that you started off was the crap place, but don't worry because you're destined for bigger things, you know?
Mm.
And I guess what I wanted to say is, but actually you can still do great things where you are. You can still make a difference where you are with who you are. You don't have these kids in the book. Yes. And I've just talked about, you know, a kid who's got talking to his disembodied mum's voice. but I mean, you know, these kids don't have special powers. They don't have magic. They're not Harry Potter. They don't have a destiny, you know, and these kids are being called on to effectively save the entire world, you know, and all they've got is themselves, their wits, right, and their own sort of skills that they've got. Because one of the kids is like really, you know, she's really clever because she studies hard and stuff.
Yeah.
Like. But at the same time, she's not that kind of Hermione type character. You know, she's kind of the leader in a lot of ways. I'd probably compare her more to like Sherlock Holmes type character, you know?
Okay.
So in some ways they're like mini, it's like a mini version of Fallen Heroes. It's a similar sort of thing where they all got their traits, and it's when they come together, that's where they make the difference. And I guess that's kind of what it was like for me growing up.
In all fairness, that then what you've kind of just said there kind of brings us all round full circle in many respects to a close, I guess. You talked earlier on about how being a hero doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do the big things. In the same respect that these kids don't have to be superhuman or amazing. They're just ordinary kids doing heroic, basic, normal things. And the novel, as you've already said earlier on as well, does also tie into the Unseen Shadows world. That's correct, yeah?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
So it does feel like you're kind of looking at bringing everything round full circle, within your writing in many respects. So what's next then after this? You know, do you know if you're going to move on to another younger novel or will we see an offshoot or will we see something completely different? Have you got any ideas yet, or are you just going to finish these next two novels and make a decision then?
No, I've got ideas. So obviously, I've got to get this one out. So that's hopefully, touch wood, will be out in October.
Coming months, yeah, that's what I've seen.
And then I've got Be Going Hell for Leather for Silent Immortals. I can't give a date. For every time I give a date for one of those books, it's vastly out. I would like to get Silent Immortals out far quicker than I have the other books, just because there's a lot of people that have hassled me.
Yeah.
But after that, I've already planned I've done a full plan for this a second Cursed Cobras book.
Is that going to be a trilogy, or are we not saying yet? We'll just see how it goes.
It won't be a trilogy in the sense of Unseen Shadows stuff. Essentially, Unseen Shadows trilogy, as I have to call it now. There will be threads, but these will be more standalone-ish.
Right, I see.
My idea was to, so a lot of books tend to do things. Certainly, books that are centered around schools tend to do a book for each kind of school year type thing.
Right,
Harry Potter style.
Yeah.
My idea was to kind of condense it all to like probably the craziest year ever. So it would almost be each. This would be a book for each term.
Okay. Okay. That's a pretty big year.
Yeah, it is a pretty big year. And then potentially there would be a reason why this has all gone on. But again, it's that thing of seemed silly that I started with a whole world ending book because I've then got to do another book. So how do I top the world ending? But it's kind of like, just make the world end again, but in a slightly different way. So, but then the third book that I'm kind of planning might be slightly more condensed. I don't know. And then it will be either some standalone Unseen Shadows novels featuring sort of characters, but these will be much smaller because it'll be like one or two, because I might do like a, say like a Ben and Steph one or something like that.
Right.
I've toyed with the idea of adapting some of the comics as novels.
Oh, okay.
And potentially, although I'd probably be in my 70s by the time I get around to that, of doing another trilogy called, in my head, I had the idea of a first book being called Future Heroes, just because I'd actually, one of the comics which never, because we've got quite a few comics which never got finished, and one of them was set 8 years in the future. And okay. It was centered around Ben's granddaughter.
Okay.
And I kind of like the idea of revisiting the universe, but kind of like 20 years on maybe or something like that.
Right.
And again, maybe focusing on the younger characters who would now be at the same age of like your Napoleons and stuff like that. But as I said, that's... It's a long way off.
A long way off.
Yeah. Long but I think when you get to the end of Forgotten Warriors, there's a whole thing with Forgotten Warriors, which kind of, it blows everything out of the water. And I always say that once you read that, you realize that kind of everything's a bit possible. I don't want to say anymore.
Okay. Yeah. We'll leave it at that then. Well, I guess all that's left to say is thank you for coming on, Barry. Do you want to let us know where people can find you and where they'll be able to buy not only the new novel, but all the other content that you've produced and released over the years?
The best place at the moment is probably unseenshadows.com, just because it's the site which is up.
Yeah, but?
But my new site, which will be barrynugent.com, I'm hoping will be available at some stage this month. I don't know when this podcast is going to go out. So
Yeah, it should be out in the next... week or so, I'm going to guess, but I won't make any promises because my editor and producer will kill me. Sorry, Daryl.
Yeah, it should be out. It should be. Yeah, the new website should hopefully be up by the end of the month because I want to do a pre-order for Curse Cobras. Right. Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Okay. Well, once again, Barry, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and as always, you really have been a true gent. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, man. It's a pleasure.
Cheers, dude.